Okay, the sugya that we're starting today brings us into the world of Dinim Darabanan, and more pointedly, which we've already been in that world already, with Bedikas Chametz very possibly being a rabbinic law, or to some extent certainly being a Din Darabanan, we are now going to look at the question of how Dinim Daraisa and Dinim Darabanan interact with each other. And our assumption would be that Dinim Daraisa should always win. That Dinim Daraisa certainly are more chamer. We know that's the rule. That, as we touched upon a little bit already, that if we're not sure about a matter of Torah law of Dinim Daraisa, we have to be machmir. While when it comes to Dinim Darabanan, we are makel in many, many different ways. And certainly, the authority of the Torah, we would assume, is greater than any human being, no matter who they are. So it seems pretty clear to us, logically, it would seem, that Torah law should always take priority over rabbinic law. But what we find is that not so clear that's always the case. And we're going to see an example of that in less than a week, when Torah law tells us that this coming Shabbos we should blow shofar. And yet, we are not going to do that. We are going to hold back because the rabbis told us not to. So apparently they have that authority. And you got a chance, hopefully this morning, to see a little bit about that. Again, it's hard to point to an exact sugi which says it so clearly, but you see how it's referenced in the Gemara in Yevamos, Adav Sadi Amid Beis. That Gemara came after a whole back and forth of a lot of considerations, and even that Gemara, after being so lengthy in words, ends up being very sparse because it just uses one word each to refer to a number of different dinim, and then Rashi has to tell us what these dinim are about, and at least one of them Rashi says, I'm not even sure what this din is about. So all of it comes through a little bit of a murky picture. So we'll try to sort that out as best we can. But the concept's going to be challenging one way or another. So the example that we are focused on for this week, and it's relevant to Sukkot as well, is that here we find the Torah tells us to do something. The Torah tells us that we are obligated to blow shofar on Rosh Hashanah, whatever day of the week it is. We're obligated to take a lulav and esrog on the first day of Sukkot, whatever day of the week it is. And the rabbi said, well, if it's Shabbos, don't, as is the case this year. So here you have a direct contradiction between rabbinic law and Torah law, and we follow rabbinic law. Now, the specifics of shofar is something we'll revisit probably later in the week, but for now, just as a general concept and seeing this as an example, that's the case, that we follow the rabbinic law to skip the Torah obligation of blowing shofar. And there's a lot we need to figure out about why is that something that works, why is that something that's even conceivable, and what are the implications of such a ruling. So first of all, we discussed a little bit, for those who were with us, the Parshas Shir that we had before this Zman started, Parshas Shoftim. So we'll draw upon that, but I put on this morning's list to look at the Pasuk in Parshas Shoftim and the Rashi over there, which is a part of the background. So just as a general, try to get the 5-minute version here. So we follow rabbinic law. Why? How do we know? Why do we have to listen to what the rabbis say? We know that there have been Jews throughout history who haven't followed rabbinic law. We don't consider them to be doing the right thing, but there have been sects within Judaism who only kept the written Torah. And a lot of what we find is sometimes our response in halacha to make sure to emphasize the importance of rabbinic law in the face of that kind of an attitude. And more recently, so we have those who feel that, okay, the Torah is the Torah, but the rabbis, why should they be able to tell us what to do? So what's the immediate response? How do you find that rabbinic law is binding? Why is rabbinic law binding? So anyone want to help with that? Yeah, Rabbi?
I mean, because of that pasuk, lo saser.
So lo saser is the most likely possibility, that pasuk in Shoftim. And there are a few Gemaras that strengthen that presumption. And most prominently, it's the view of one major Rishon, at least, and others as well, but most prominently associated with the Rambam. Right? That the Rambam maintains that that pasuk tells us that we have to listen to rabbinic legislation. Pasuk tells us that when you have, just to recount what the pasuk says, that you saw, that if you have some kind of question about how to follow the Torah, so you go to the halachic authority, and yasisa kasher yerucha, do what he tells you to do, lotzasim min hadavar, do not deviate from his instructions. Not to the right or to the left. Yamin u'smon. So the Rambam maintains that there you have it. Okay, the rabbi is telling you to do something, you have to do it. And the Rambam writes in Hilchos Mamrim that when they make a rule, you have to follow it because of this pasuk. Now we discussed a little bit then that it's controversial. And this is a very short version just to remind us of what the key controversies are here so we know how to incorporate it into this discussion. That most prominently the Ramban took issue with this, because the Ramban said, first of all, the context is only judiciary authority. Right? To use the language of the modern United States governmental system, we have three branches. So two of those branches are the legislature that makes the laws, and the judiciary that interprets the laws, and they are specifically and deliberately separated from each other. The judiciary interprets the existing law. If you want to know whether something is kosher according to the Constitution, that is the judiciary, not the legislature. But if you want to say what should be, not what is, but what I think should be, I think it would be a good idea to have a law like this, that is the role of the legislature and not of the judiciary. And in the American system, they are deliberately kept separate. At least that's the intent, if it doesn't always play out that way. In the halachic system, so here the Torah is saying follow what they say. So the Ramban would argue that the context here is purely judiciary. You don't know what the Torah wants you to do. So you go to the rabbis and they tell you what the Torah means. But if they're going to say, and I think you should also do this, I think it would be a good idea to have a policy like that. So it doesn't sound like the Psukim are talking about that. So the Rambam's view that that's included was controversial. And one of the major issues on top of just the context was how can you have kulas midrabbanan if there are so many areas where we are lenient in rabbinic law. According to the Rambam, it's all Torah law. Torah says follow what they say to do. So every din derabbanan is included in Torah law. So how do you deal with that? And there are many answers for a different time. And if you are able to answer the questions to defend the Rambam, you're then left to try to figure out the Ramban. The questions on the Ramban might be bigger, because if you don't accept this pasuk, so then the question was, how do you have any obligation to follow rabbinic law at all? And if you don't like this pasuk and you like a different pasuk, you'll have the same problems, because it'll all still be that essentially it's Torah law. And why is there any basis to distinguish? How can I be lenient in a suffix or abanan? Doesn't it all trace back to a Torah prohibition of los asa? So that was one issue we'll have in the background, that question of the assumption that this is the source for rabbinic law, at least according to some, and the reasons why it is challenged. A second issue in that pasuk, which will also be relevant to us soon, is what does it mean when it says Yamin Usmol at the end of the pasuk? Now you shouldn't deviate to the right or to the left. So what do those words mean? Right. So now we're in the middle of the election season, and we're very conditioned to believe right and left are political terms, liberal, conservative. But that's not the Torah's terminology, right? That goes back to the French Parliament. I think we mentioned at the time when the conservatives sat on the right part of the room and the liberals sat on the left side of the room. It's not the Torah lingo. So what does it mean when it says right or left? What is the intent of that? So what does Rashi tell us that the intent of that phrasing is? Right, Rashi quoting from Chazal. Right, okay, Levi's up.
something looks, like, even if you use something looks right, and the rabbis tell you lust, listen to that.
Okay, so you added in a word which might be important, so you're just going beyond us, right? So Rashi says, even if right is left and left is right, even if they tell you the opposite of what is. So the question that Levi was jumping to the answer of, the question is, it sounds like from Rashi that you're supposed to follow even a mistake. If they tell you to do something that is the opposite of what's correct, you still should follow them. And that's very problematic because it doesn't seem to be the halacha, it doesn't seem to be understandable. We have a whole mesechta that's about what to do if we make a mistake, and that mesechta clearly says over there in the Horius and Dazbeis that you should not, if you listen to a ruling from the Beis Din HaGadol that you know to be wrong, it's your problem and you're accountable because you were wrong in listening to them. So the Rashi is very difficult. And as Levi adds in, so some have a girsa that it looks to you like it's left is right and right is left. Not that it actually is. If you really knew it to be a mistake, then indeed you shouldn't follow it. But it's a surprising response, even a very surprising response you should follow. So this was also a machlokes. So we'll keep this in the back of our minds. Lo Sasser is a possible source, a machlokes about how that could work, the Rambam and the Ramban. And Rashi's comment that Yaman is small means even follow something that is wrong. So that's a problematic interpretation, and then he's suggesting it doesn't mean actually wrong, but it means it seems wrong, but you don't actually know that it's a real mistake. Okay, so now with that, so we find the Gemara in Yevamos telling us, after a lot of back and forth, that this power even extends to telling us that we should follow rabbinic law that overrides Torah law. And there are a number of examples. The Gemara in Yevamos there lists off in this very brief way a whole bunch of examples, each one only one word at a time, and you need the Rashi to explain it. And there are other examples that the Rishonim suggest. There could be a whole long list of examples. So we'll just focus on two from that Gemara that'll come up. The most common is the one we're talking about this week, called Gezeira Derabba. That's the one that is most frequently discussed and is relevant to us now, that Chazal were concerned apparently about carrying on Shabbos, about carrying Brishus Sarabim, and they said, Gezeira Shema Yavirenu Dalaramus Brishus Sarabim, because we're afraid that you may come to carry an object in the public domain, so therefore certain mitzvos that involve objects, they told us not to do. So those objects we know include shofar, and we know they include lulav, and they could include more things also, and some things they don't seem to include, and that's something we'll talk about later. Rishonim ask, why doesn't it go further? Why don't they prohibit matzah on the Seder night that falls out on Shabbos? Why don't they prohibit a bris milah on Shabbos, which involves tools? And so the limits is something we'll come back to. For some reason, with certain mitzvos that involve objects, they said don't do them on Shabbos because we're afraid you may come to carry them. And this also extends to Megillas Esther. We don't read the Megillah on Shabbos. That's a little less surprising because Megillah is a din derabbanan to begin with. A lot to discuss about that in a different context. But these are the most prominent and indisputed examples. We don't blow shofar, we don't take lulav on Shabbos because of this concern. Another example that we'll also draw upon is, the Gemara refers to it here very briefly, Sadin Betzitzis, that by Torah law, if you have a garment that is made out of linen, four-cornered garment made out of linen, and to attach tzitzis to it, you're going to have to attach wool strings to this linen garment, so that would create a violation of Shabbos, Torah prohibition. But the Gemara says in the beginning of Yevamos, you do it anyway. This is an example of another principle, Haseh Docheh Lo Saseh. That, I mean, the Gemara learns that a different way, but it's related to the idea of Haseh Docheh Lo Saseh, that when you have a positive mitzvah and a negative mitzvah in direct conflict, so the positive mitzvah wins out. Also somewhat counterintuitive, perhaps. So the mitzvah of tzitzis prevails over the prohibition of shatnez. That's what you should do by Torah law. But here the rabbis, the Gemara and Menachos as well, the rabbis came in and said, no, don't do it. Do not put tzitzis on this garment for a number of considerations. They were worried, the Gemara gives a couple possibilities. Maybe you'll come to wear this garment at night when there's no mitzvah tzitzis. Maybe your garment will rip and it won't be chayiv in tzitzis, but it'll still be subject to the prohibition of shadness. Maybe you won't really have kosher tzitzis. Number of considerations the Gemara gives. So it says, as the rabbinic policy, they said, don't do this. We're worried that you're going to end up violating shatnez without justification. So even though, if you were doing everything perfectly, tzitzis would win out over shatnez. It wouldn't be an issur shatnez. But the rabbi said, no, don't do the tzitzis, because there's a number of possibilities that could get in the way, where you'll just have the prohibition of shatnez without the mitzvah tzitzis. So don't do it. So those are two of the most famous examples of what the Gemara calls akiras davar min ha-Torah. Yesh koach lakor davar min ha-Torah. The rabbis have the authority to uproot something which is min ha-Torah. And these are examples of that. And the Gemara in one place over there in that discussion at one point considers that maybe they could do this for all kinds of dinim in the Torah. And the conclusion is that it has this condition, has to be b'shev al tasa. What does that mean, shev al tasa, in this context? So yeah, Velvel?
Passively.
So passively sounds like a behavior term, right? As long as you're not doing anything. And we'll see that that's actually going to prompt some specific questions. But it sounds like it means passively. So it sounds like it means like to tell you to do an avera, like eating non-kosher food or being mechal Shabbos. So the rabbis have no authority to do that. That's what it sounds like. But what they mean is I'll tell you to sit back and don't do something. Shev al tasa. So in these examples, they're telling you not to put tzitzis on a garment. And Tosfos, if you see, Tosfos gets in, well, is that active or passive? Because then you're going to walk around with a four-cornered garment that doesn't have tzitzis. Maybe that's active, and Tosfos has to figure out exactly how that fits the definition of passive. But in the case of shofar and lulav, okay, so the Torah tells us, just blow shofar, take a lulav, and the rabbi said, just don't. Just sit out that mitzvah, essentially. Shev al tasa. But it could have been, according to some opinions of the Gemara, that the power was beyond that, but that's the conclusion, that we say b'shev al tasa. Are there exceptions? Maybe. We've shown them get into it. They also get into the discussion of what kinds of circumstances justify this. And we know that rabbinic legislation is for many different purposes. And sometimes the rabbis made takanos to prevent social problems, the Gemara calls tikkun ha'olam, or to do other purposes. In these examples, it was to prevent an avera, to prevent chil Shabbos, to prevent shatnez. And there is a debate whether this is the only kind of scenario. If you're preventing averas, the Turi Evan writes in one place, Turi Evan is written by the author of the Shagas Aryeh, that it only applies in situations where you're trying to prevent averos. It doesn't apply for other purposes. We'll see there are some who disagree with that. We'll mention at least one example that doesn't fit those parameters that you find in the Rishonim. But these are part of the aspects that are discussed. What kind of a justification would be sufficient for the rabbis to do something so extreme, to tell you to avoid a mitzvah? What kind of a basis do they need? What kind of a bezdin do you need? All right, that's an interesting discussion as well. You'd assume you probably need a pretty heavy-duty bezdin for this purpose, which is likely you would probably think this is something you couldn't do b'zman hazeh, which is what I would probably assume also. There's an interesting tshuva. Rav Moshe Feinstein has a tshuva where he talks about whether a kohen who's mechal Shabbos, that he duchen or not. So she do Birkas Kohanim. So there are a few exclusions for Kohanim who worship Avodah Zarah or who kill people. But the Gemara never says that otherwise any other Aveira disqualifies a Kohen. So Michal Shabbos sounds like he should Duchen. So Rav Moshe Feinstein wrote in a tshuva, he said that he thinks that that's the din, that a Michal Shabbos should Duchen. And he says, if you want to say we should make a communal policy, that we shouldn't allow it, because then that will encourage more people to be Shomer Shabbos, because they want to be able to Duchen. He says, maybe, but here you have, we don't find there ever was such a gzeira. So right now we just have a mitzvah min ha-Torah and Parshas Nosa for the Kohanim to Duchen. And we don't find that any Bezdin ever said otherwise, not then or now. So that line was interesting, because it sounds like he was saying that, okay, in his day already also, 50 years ago, a Bezdin could come and make such a gzeira, but we haven't seen it. So this is the basic layout here, that we have this power at least to Bez and Agadol to make these gezeros that uproot Torah law. And that language is strong, and we'll have to see in a minute if that language is appropriate. But at the moment, that's a direct translation of the word in the Gemara. La'akor would mean to uproot, which itself is a very strong word. So we have to see if that really fits, but that's the language that we see. So where does this power come from? Right? How do you know that you have this power? So the Gemara, okay, Gemara gives us this conclusion. But how did the Gemara know? Where does the Gemara see in the Torah that this power exists? Any indication? Yeah, Ari?
Well, I was just saying, on the contrary, don't we have this principle, the Torah principle called Figure of all Joseph? There's contention with any rabbinic legislation to deal with in the first place on a Torah level.
Okay, so that is a great question. That's something that very much needs attention. We'll come back to it in this conversation in a little bit. But your question is very well taken from two aspects. So first of all, why is not any mitzvah d'rabbanan a violation of Baal Tosef? Right? Even if it didn't contradict anything in the Torah, doesn't that seem to violate the isser of adding on to the Torah? Right, that's a meta question in the realm of Dinim D'Rabbanan, which is very much a topic of concern. And just parenthetically, to give a quick response to it, the Rambam in Hilchos Mamrim talks about it, and that very possibly is the best or one of the best answers to the Ramban's attack. Right, so the Ramban who said, how are we makel by rabbinic law if it's all according to the Rambam from Lo Sasser? So there are some who suggest that the rabbis Davka set it up that way. That is true that by default we would have had to be machmir by rabbinic law also. But the rabbis set it up so that we would have a different rule for rabbinic law, we'd be makel. So then the question after that is why? Why did they make such a distinction? So the Rambam seems to answer it himself, because there needs to be a distinction, because otherwise it would be a violation of Baal Tosef. That the way the Rambam seems to understand the prohibition of Baal Tosef, it's that a question of presentation is involved. That if you were to make new legislation and to pass it off as part of the Torah itself, that would be a violation of Baal Tosef. But if you're clear that it's not from the Torah, but you just say, this is our policy, that the Torah said, the Rambam's example is chicken and milk. Chicken and milk is a rabbinic prohibition. Torah says you can't have meat and milk, beef and milk. So the Rambam says the rabbis are empowered to say you can't have chicken and milk as long as they make it clear that that's rabbinic law. But if they were to pass it off as, oh, that's what the Torah means when it says, Lo Sivashu Gadiba Chalev Imo, it means you can't have chicken and milk, that would be a violation of Baal Tosef. That's one of many approaches to the very legitimate question of why isn't Baal Tosef an issue. Now here in this sugya, so you could add, what about Baal Tigra? Right? If the Torah says, do a mitzvah, and the rabbis say, don't do it, so why is that not a violation of Baal Tigra? It's a very legitimate question. That part we'll come back to. So you're right. So that's the opposite of the answer we're looking for, because we're trying to see where in the Torah is this authority, and you're raising a very good question where you think actually the Torah is saying explicitly, don't do this. So that we'll have to come back to. But where do we find this authority? Ladies, you want to address that?
We have it in regards to Nevi'im, I think.
Okay, so yeah, how do you see it in Nevi'im?
I don't remember exactly where explicitly it is in Devarim, but I know that that we have Eliyahu on Har Carmel.
Okay, so an important thing to understand about the Nevi'im, an important distinction, which I appreciate you bringing up, is that Nevi'im are actually not allowed to undo the Torah in a permanent way. Right? So if the Nevi'im would come and say, don't follow within the Torah anymore, that's actually one of the indications that they're not to be followed, that they're a Navi Sheker. And that's one of our problems with Christianity, among other things. Right, that to abrogate parts of the Torah, among other issues, that's part of our indication that it's not correct to Mahala. But they do have sometimes the authority to call Hara Shah. That's for a limited time to say that, okay, we have to take a different step, we have to take a different path, that could be. But the answer to this question, where did Chazal get the authority, is a matter of legislation. Right, the difference between a Navi and a Chacham, among other things, is that a Navi comes and says, okay, this is what a Kadosh Baruch Hu told me. Right, so if a Navi were to come tomorrow and say, a Kadosh Baruch Hu told me that you don't have to keep kosher anymore, so that would be a big problem for us. We wouldn't accept what that Navi would say. And if a Navi would come and say, oh, God told me you shouldn't blow shofar anymore, we wouldn't listen to that. But apparently if the rabbis say, don't blow shofar on Shabbos, we do listen to that. So where does that authority come from? So Rabbi Chanan Wasserman suggested that it's actually in the pasuk that you saw already, and that could answer a question that we saw already. And if the pasuk says, well, Sosum and Adavar, we shouldn't deviate from what the rabbinic instruction is. And then as these words, Yomen is small. And Rashi quoted from Chazal, that even if they tell you left is right and right is left, even if they were to tell you the opposite of the truth. And we had a big problem with that, because if Chazal make a mistake, we have a tradition we shouldn't follow. We have Pesukim and Chumash and Masechtas and Shas telling us we shouldn't follow a mistake. So we left that as a big problem at the beginning a few minutes ago, right? That Rashi says follow something that you know is left is right, right is left. Apparently follow something you know is wrong. And yet, we're not supposed to follow that which we know is wrong. So maybe you say, well, maybe it means that you think it's wrong, that it looks wrong. So says Rabbi Chanan Wasserman, who we will be referring to a lot in this discussion, by Rabbi Chanan, you're familiar with, the author of the Kovet Shiurim, and very important on Pesachim. Rabbi Chanan was a Talmud of the Chafetz Chaim, and he was killed by the Nazis in 1941. And he wrote a five essays really, on Dinim Derabanan, which are collected called Kuntres Divrei Sofrim. Kuntres Divrei Sofrim is printed in the Kovet Shiurim, and parts of it are in his Sefer on Yevamos. Nowadays you can get a separate volume with footnotes, very important stuff. So in the Kuntres Divrei Sofrim, Rabbi Chanan writes that maybe this is the answer. That yes, indeed, if the rabbis really made a mistake, an absolute mistake, that you know is a mistake, so then you're not supposed to follow. But what if it's not a mistake? Right? What if they say, we're well aware that the Torah tells you to blow shofar no matter what day of the week it is. But we think, as a matter of policy, we should tell you not to blow shofar on Shabbos, because it may lead to chilul Shabbos. We're well aware that by Torah law, you should attach tzitzis to a woolen garment, to a linen garment. But we're telling you not to do it because it may lead to violating the Isser Shatnez without justification. How do you know they have such power? So says Rabbi Chanan, it's a very elegant interpretation. If you think about it, that's what this pasuk is saying. right? If they give you instruction, don't follow their instruction, and don't deviate from instruction, follow their instruction, even if left is right and left and right is left, even if it's the opposite of the truth. You shouldn't follow them if it's a mistake. No, if they've made a mistake, don't follow. But if they know what they're saying, and they're saying, even so, we are making legislation that contradicts that, that legislation is binding. Now, part of the elegance is, you see, this works specifically for the Rambam. I said, if you follow the Rambam's opinion that this pasuk includes legislative authority, that they're able to make new laws also, so then it reads well. So if you have a question, you don't know what to do, you go to the rabbis, and you have to listen to whatever they tell you to do, and you also have to listen to new laws that they make, even Yomenu Shmol. Even if they make new laws that tell you to do the opposite of what the Torah means, you still have to listen. So, Alvin, you have a question about that?
Yeah, just on, like, the nuance of the answer.
Mm-hmm.
When you say, I don't want to do it because it's a mistake, you're saying you think it's a mistake because that's not what the Torah is telling you to do.
Right.
So what's the difference between saying that and this answer?
Because it's two different hats. If they come with a hat of saying that our interpretation of Torah law is XYZ, and you know it's ABC, and you know that for a fact, you know it's absolutely, and this gets into a lot of nuance itself, how could you actually know for sure? Maybe you're wrong, so there's a whole process there. Let's say, you know, you can see that they're just making a mistake. So then, that's a process that doesn't stick. But when they use their legislative hat, and they say, Torah says, blow shofar every day of the week. But we are legislating not to do that because of the risk of Chilul Shabbos. And we understand very well that that's not what the Torah says. But we are extending a matter of policy to not blow shofar on Shabbos, so then that policy is binding. Their authority extends to that as well. So it's a subtle difference, but that's apparently the difference. Now here, just to add a point, which is a little different from what Rabbi Yochanan writes, so you have to say, and this is different if you look it up inside, that Rabbi Yochanan's pshat works very well for the Rambam, specifically, that if you believe this pasuk includes new dinim, so then Yomenu Shmol could mean that. For the Ramban, you have a problem, because the Ramban only sees it as applying to interpretations, judiciary authority. So according to the Ramban, how do you read Yomenu Shmol? If it only means that they're telling you what the Torah means, then Yomenu Shmol seems to mean even if they actually make a mistake in the meaning of the Torah. So the elegant part to that is that the Ramban actually does say in his commentary to Chumash that you follow even if it's an actual mistake. And if they tell you something is left when it's really right, then it's a real mistake, and you know it's a mistake, the Ramban says you follow it anyway. Now, what about Horios, and what about all the contradictions against that? It's a problem, and there's a lot of literature to offer answers. Maybe there's different kinds of situations. Maybe it depends, have you had a chance to argue it out with them or not? There's a lot of nuance there, but it's the Ramban. I don't think Rabbi Yochanan's approach works for the Ramban, but it's okay because for the Ramban, you don't have the question because according to the Ramban, you follow something even if it's a mistake. So both the Rambam and the Ramban can be harmonized according to this. Hi, Velvo.
And what's the Ramban's source?
So the Ramban, well, first of all, the same medrash that the Rashi quotes, but without interpreting it like Levi before, that it means it looks like it's a mistake. It just sounds like it means it is a mistake. So the Ramban has that same medrash. Also, he points to a story you might be familiar with, the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah, about Rabbi Yeshua and Rabban Gamliel. That Rabban Gamliel had a different interpretation of when the month was and when Yom Kippur was, and he told Rabbi Yeshua that you must submit to me, and you must come on the day that you think is Yom Kippur, and follow my opinion, even though it's, according to your opinion, something else. Then Rabbi Yeshua was wrong, but Rabbi Yeshua felt he was wrong, but he listened to him anyway. So the Ramban quotes that as a source also. The big question that Rav Schechter has the whole discussion about this, and one of his svarim and others ask, is that Kiddush HaChodesh has its own rules. The Gemara says in Rosh Hashanah that Kiddush HaChodesh, that's a different story. Kiddush HaChodesh, we have a separate drasha that tells us that that is binding, even if it was a mistake, even if it was an intentional mistake, that Chazal have the authority to set the month when they choose to. So Kiddush HaChodesh doesn't have the same mechanics as everything else, so to bring them one as a source to the other is a little bit complicated. But basically, those are the Ramban sources, that either that the Medrash that reads the Pasuk this way, and from Chazal, that story about Kiddush HaChodesh. Hi. Yeah.
Didn't we say, though, that the Ramban had a problem with that Pasuk, that he said that wasn't referring to making laws?
Right, so therefore it's referring to interpreting laws. So even when they interpret a law as a mistake, sorry about that phone, I can't use that.
Of interior and exterior remodeling, and we have a long list of satisfied local customers. We can provide you with
they have a long list of satisfied customers.
Free financing with low and
sorry,
monthly payments. Please press the 2 key on your touchtone keypad to schedule your free estimate without application.
Yes, literally.
Experience expert remodeling.
Yes, that is literally commercial break. The Zoom era has this. Okay, so we'll try to talk about it for a second. So, that's the Ramban would work l'shitaso. Now, just parenthetically also, what's the logic of the Ramban? Right? Why should you follow, besides sources, but why should you follow something that's wrong? If you know it's a mistake, why should you follow it? So that the Ramban indicates a little bit also in the Sefer Achinuch says that it's because, as a matter of policy, we just can't have everyone making their own decisions, and it'll never be resolved who's right and who's wrong. And we need to have Achdus in Klal Yisrael. We need to have a path, so we should be able to swallow a few mistakes. You know, literally, if they tell you something is kosher than isn't, we'll swallow a few mistakes in order to have a unified practice in Klal Yisrael, and that's more important. And that's a fascinating discussion of itself. Sefer Achinuch takes that position also. But for now, just a little bit of a taste of that, that's essentially how the Ramban will come out. But according to the Rambam and Rav Chanan, Rav Chanan says this across the board, but it works specifically according to the Rambam, the source for this idea of Chazal being able to override the Torah is this pasuk, that Lo Sasser and Yomin is small. We'll see when we get more specifically, later in the week, we'll speak more specifically about the Gzeirah of Rosh Hashanah and Shabbos, and we'll see there may even be a hint to it in the Torah itself, and that provokes a whole discussion also about how things work. But beyond Shofar and Shabbos, the topic as a whole, so this is Rav Chanan's explanation. I should also just add to the mix for comprehensivity that there is a pasuk in Parshas Achrimos, that the pasuk says, "Ushmartim es mishmarti," that you should protect my safeguards. And the Gemara in Yevamos reads that pasuk to say, I'll give you this to look at tomorrow, that asu mishmeres l'mishmarti, that you should make a safeguard to my isurim. So that is also brought as one of the sources for Chazal's Gezeros, and that's also invoked in this discussion. Now, there are different indications of what role those two psukim play together. I think the simplest way to say it, though, is that one is talking about the motive and one is talking about the authority. That Ushmarti Mishmarti is the motive that you should safeguard the Torah, like Mishnah says in Pirkei Avos, Asiyu Siyag LaTorah. And that tells us that we should always make sure that the Torah is protected. So a couple of fascinating things here. It just ties back into the beginning of the Masechta. So first of all, Pirkei Avos tells us this use of the Torah. It's the first Mishnah in Pirkei Avos. If you look in the Avos de Rav Nosson, the Avos de Rav Nosson is an expanded version of Pirkei Avos. So there, it has a longer version of this. So it says, "Ezehu siag she'asasa haTorah la'atzma." Now, where do you find that the Torah itself makes a siag, makes a safeguard? And it gives the example of what high school students call negiyah, the prohibition of kiruv l'arayos, that an isser arayos isn't only the actual via, but it's any kind of affectionate behavior. So the Alvester of Nassim quotes that as an example of an isser d'araisa that the Torah put there to protect other isserim d'araisa. So we have the Torah itself making its own gezeros, and then the Mishnah says, so we should make siag, we should make these protective measures. And the Mesilas Yesharim explains that that is true for everyone. So let's say, for example, most people can walk past McDonald's and they don't feel they have to jump in and have a cheeseburger. Right, but let's say you can't. You walk past McDonald's and you see that sign, two burgers, fries and a Coke and a free helicopter, 65 cents. Like, I got to do that. So you can't resist. So you know every time it happens, you're pulled in. So then for you personally, the Mesil Sishara writes, so then you shouldn't walk down that block. Chazal didn't make a gzera like that for everyone, because most people, it didn't rise to the level of something that was a threat to Klal Yisrael as a whole. But an individual who has whatever challenges he has, so then he should make safeguards to prevent them. So the way, I think the simplest way to say the relationship between these two psukim is that Ushmarta Mismishmarti tells us about the value of making safeguards that we find on an individual level, you find it on all kinds of different levels throughout Jewish history. And the concept of Lo Sasser, so that tells us that the rabbis can tell us what to do. So the rabbis can make legislation per the Rambam, and the motive for that legislation might be the other pasuk of Ushmarta Mismishmarti, that because they have a job to keep us safe from Averos, so they may tell us what to do. And it's also important to have both, because as we'll also see, that yes, they can make Averos, but that power is not absolute. It has to be justified by the circumstances. So if something doesn't rise to the level of a significant danger to Klal Yisrael, so then they didn't just act whenever they felt like it. They made gezeros based on significant concerns. And if it didn't rise to that level, if only one person in a million would have such a yetzer, so then they didn't make a gezera like that. And some explain also, I think we mentioned, that's why we don't find Drabanan is on top of Drabanan, that they don't make a Drabanan to protect you from violating rabbinic law, because that didn't rise to the same level. It was only Torah law that justified such protective legislation. Okay, so with that, so fine, okay, maybe that's the case. So they have such authority, and this authority even extends to contradicting the Torah. So that sets us up for the first major question. And we'll see, Rabbi Chanan Wasserman will play a big role in this shir, because he has a beautiful piece, really a classic piece, on this topic of Yesh Koach Laker Davar Min HaTorah. And you know, we will draw from it in some ways, say a little bit different from other ways. It appears at least in two places. It appears in a Sefer on Yevamos, on the Sugya, the Kovetz Haros, and it also appears in this Kuntres Divrei Sofrim, which is printed in the Kovetz Shira. For some reason, you know, it's like, why do we drive in a parkway and park in a driveway? So, the Bachan and the Kovetz Haros, those are the long Shira, beautiful, intricate Shira, and the Kovetz Shira are the short Haros. I don't know why that's the way it is, but that's how. So the Kovetz Haros on Yevamos, he has this very intricate web and a very beautiful shir about this topic. And part of the beauty of it, really, this could really turn somebody on to learning for a lifetime, this piece in the Bachan is really very beautiful. So he has three interlocked questions. Three chakiros that end up tying back into each other. So today we'll only be able to start one of them, but you'll see how this influences the others. So the first question is the biggest question. The other two we'll mention afterwards. First question is, what do the words mean? Yesh kala lakir davar min ha-Torah. Like we said before, that is pretty heavy language. To uproot something from the Torah. Is that really the case? Do the rabbis really have the ability to rewrite the Torah? It no longer contains that mitzvah? So the Torah says, blow shofar on Shabbos. The rabbis say, nope, we're ripping that one out. It's not there anymore. There's no longer any mitzvah to blow shofar on Shabbos. Lakor davar min ha-Torah. Does it mean that? Or should we say, no, we don't think it could possibly mean that. Isn't that a big definition of Orthodox Judaism, that we believe the Torah is eternal? We just said on Thursday, right, that the bris that God made with the Jews in Parshas Nitzavim is for all generations, and said this also to indicate that the content of the bris is never changing. So we don't believe you could change the Torah. So it must mean that, no, the mitzvah is still there. It's still a mitzvah to blow shofar on Shabbos, mitzvah to blow shofar on Rosh Hashanah, whatever day of the week it is, including Shabbos. But the rabbis have the authority to override it. The rabbis have the authority, which fits the way Rabbi Chanan said it, basically, that lo sasser, don't deviate, even if they tell you, we know the Torah says differently. But nonetheless, this is what we're saying to do. Sit it out. Sit out this Rosh Hashanah. Just don't blow shofar. So that's question number one. And this is the one that has the most to try to figure out and the most sources. So what do you think about this question? Right, when the rabbi said, don't blow shofar on Shabbos or whatever else they said, don't put tzitzis on a wool garment, a linen garment. Whatever else they said that was in this category. What is the impact? Does it actually rewrite the Torah and rewrite the mitzvah? Or should we say, no, that is inconceivable, theologically and halachically, it can't be. And it must just mean that we are told to act in compliance with the rabbinic directive, but the Torah stays the way it is. The mitzvah is still there. So can you tell me either a mucker that you may have seen that talks about this, or a nafkamina, even without a mucker? How would this affect the halacha if you phrase it one way or the other? We'll accept either kind of a comment. Yes, Ari?
I think we saw in connection to the recitation of Kriyat Shema, after the time is kutzot halachic midnight, that there was a dispute as to whether you cite a post chatzot, whether you're Yosei B'dieved or a Filu B'dieved and a Yosei, and that would be totally on this distinction.
Okay, so you jumped into one of the most complicated examples. So that's an interesting one, that this is a unique view, Rabbeinu Yonah. Rabbeinu Yonah, the first daf in Shas, and the first daf in Brachos, so Rabbeinu Yonah has a view there, which really nobody holds, including Rabbeinu Yonah, because you see why, that there is a machlokas in the first Mishnah in Shas about the Tovzman of Kriyat Shema. Three opinions. Two of the opinions are that Kriyat Shema could be said all night, and the opinion of Chachamim that it stops at Chatzos. And what seems clear already from the Mishnah is that there's no Torah basis to stop it at Chatzos. That as far as the Pasuk is concerned, it should be all night, or the other opinion that we mentioned, but there's no Torah basis to say Chatzos. There's nothing there that is in the Pesukim. And Chatzos is Midrabanan, that the rabbis were concerned that if you got home and said, let me watch the football game first, or let me take a nap first, then you're going to miss Kriyat Shema. And let me go to late night slichos first, and I'll say Kriyat Shema afterwards. So then you're going to collapse when you get back home, and you're going to forget Kriyat Shema. So you better do it before Chatzos. So that's already, everything about this is an outlier, because first of all, it's pretty much maybe the only example of a gezeira for a mitzvah saseh. And he said the basis of Ushmartin is Mishmarti, Mishmeris, Yishamer is a language of prohibition. So normally the gzeiros that we have to prevent Chil Shabbos, to prevent Shatnez, to prevent prohibitions. But you normally don't have to prevent, to protect a positive mitzvah. So already that's interesting. The Kriya Shema is on this list. But on top of that, Rabbi Chanan says, the Rabbeinu Yonah says, what's the impact of this gezeira? It would be that if you waited until after Chatzos to say Kriya Shema, so we would have thought, okay, you're supposed to say it beforehand. So 2 minutes before Chatzos, if they all wait a half hour, that's the wrong thing to do. The rabbi said, no, do it now. But Rabbeinu Yonah says it would mean more than that. It would mean that half hour after Chatzos, sorry, Kriya Shema is gone. It's turned to the faded color. You can't click on it anymore. You go online to click. It's not there because now it's, you can see it, but it's not black. It's gray. You can't click on it anymore. It's not there. So that would be very surprising because by Torah law, you had all night. And it's gone. So this is an extreme position, which Moshe Feinstein has a tshuva about, and the Shai Kastaye wrote about. Many disagreed with Rabbeinu Yonah. But when I say nobody holds like him, I mean including Rabbeinu Yonah. Because Rabbeinu Yonah, it's a machlokus that this gezeira exists. So we follow Chachamim that this gezeira exists. So Rabbeinu Yonah writes that what Chachamim mean is they would have meant that, that there would have been a gezeira and it would have undone Kriya Shema. But Rabbeinu Yonah paskes like Rabbeinu Gamliel, if I'm not mistaken, that there is no such gezeira. So he's saying theoretically that's what the gezeira would have meant. So practically speaking, I don't know if anybody holds this way, including Rabbeinu Yonah. But theoretically, that's an interesting and much talked about example that maybe the mitzvah of Kriya Shema could actually disappear because of the gezeira. What other possible examples could there be? Or Makoros that discuss this, or other possible nafkaminas? Yeah, Babel?
When they said to Beis Shammai, if you do Beis Shammai your whole life, you've never fulfilled sukkah.
Oh.
So if the Torah, the mitzvah of sukkah, it doesn't matter if your shulchan's in your house.
Mm-hmm.
So then how could you say that?
Okay, so here, this is a major machlokes rishonim. And here, this also plays a big role, and we'll see probably tomorrow some of the explanations in this issue. But the Gemara in Sukkah and Daf Gimel, Gemara in Brachos talks about this also, says that there was a joint unity trip between the Talmidim of Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai, and they went to visit someone on Sukkot, and they saw that he was sitting in a way that contradicts rabbinic law. Not Torah law, but rabbinic law, that by Torah law, it's okay, if you're sitting in the sukkah, you could have your table outside the sukkah. But the rabbis realized that a man follows his dinner table, and if you're going to have your table outside, it's very likely you're going to end up going outside to eat the rest of your meal. So they said, don't do it that way. The mitzvah of sukkah should be fulfilled with your table in the sukkah also. So when they saw somebody acting in violation of this rabbinic law, they said to him, "In kein ha'yisa noeg, if this is how you always do it, then lo kiyamta mitzvah sukkah miyamecha. You have never fulfilled the mitzvah of sukkah." So that's a pretty extreme statement. Right? It sounds like the rabbis were able to negate the mitzvah of sukkah based on their legislation. The Torah said something was okay. And the rabbi said, no, and it's not even a mitzvah anymore. So if you got to see it, I don't know how far you got, and you'll see this tomorrow, to machlokes rishonim what this gemara means. That Tosus over there on Daf Gimel and Sukkah says that it means what it sounds like, no mitzvah anymore. The rabbis uprooted it. And the Ran says differently. The Ran says, no, come on, they can't do that. According to Torah law, it's okay. So what he means is he didn't fulfill it perfectly. He didn't fulfill it with all the rabbinic extras. But yeah, of course, the mitzvah sukkah you did fulfill, but you didn't do a perfect job, So we allow ourselves to use the language of Lokiyam to Sukkah, Mitzvah Sukkah Miyamecha. And the Ran over there is Lushitaso, because he says the same thing by a more well-known Mishnah, which is also more about our Mitzvah, 10th parak din, God willing we should get to, that the part of the Haggadah, right, Sir Avin Gamliel Omer, Kol Shlo Omer Shlo Shedvarim Eilu Liyatsi Dechavaso, Pesach Matzo Omer. If you don't say these three things, you're not Yosef. So the Ran says, really? What does it say in the Torah you have to say these things? So how could we say you're not Yosef if you don't say these things? So the Ran there says, Lashitaso, same thing he says here in Sukkah, that no, come on, you're Yosef. But you're not Yosef perfectly. You didn't do everything that Chazal asked you to do also. So we don't mean it literally. We just mean that you didn't do your full responsibility. So that seems to also be a machlokes around this issue. So we'll have to explore the ins and outs of this. But I just want to lay out on the table and you'll see when you go to the sources tomorrow some more areas in which this impacts. So first of all, our main topic here, Shabbos and Shofar. So what if I do it? What if I blow Shofar on Shabbos anyway? Is there a mitzvah at least? Can I at least plead to the judge, you know, at least recognize I did a mitzvah, even if I flouted rabbinic law? But at least I did something? Or do we say, no, there's not even anything in your defense. There's no mitzvah here because the mitzvah is gone too. You violated rabbinic law, and there was nothing in Torah law that you did. Or, let's say, as some Achronim discuss, let's say you took a lulav the first day of Sukkot this year. And then on Sunday, you come to shul, everyone is picking up their lulav and esrog, and they are making a shechionim, because it's the first time that year they did it. Do you make a shechionim also? And say, no, well, actually, I fulfilled it yesterday. When all you guys were skipping out on this, I was a Torah Jew, I fulfilled the mitzvah yesterday, so I don't make a shechionim today. So those are questions we'll have to look at tomorrow. But also a different type of question. There are some, if we want to deal with just positive mitzvahs, there are some positive mitzvahs min HaTorah that are significantly changed by rabbinic law. They are increased. They are enhanced. And what happens if you can only do them partially, or you choose to only do them partially? What are some examples of that? Say, Kiddush. And Kiddush is from the Torah, is one of the Ten Commandments, Zachar Shema Shabbos L'Kadsho. But it's very likely that doesn't include the whole package that we do today of making Kiddush on a cup of wine, the Makom Suda, with a specific bracha. So what if you do some part of that? Are you Yotzei Min HaTorah? And you say, no, the rabbis redefined it. These are the new rules. If you don't play by these rules, you're not in the game at all. Benching. It's a pasuk in Chumash, v'achalta v'savata v'rechta. But certainly the fourth bracha, tov ha-meitiv, that's midrabbanan. What if I don't want to make that bracha? Is the mitzvah still there? So this question of how to apply the interaction of rabbinic law and Torah law is huge. It has implications throughout halacha. And we'll try to understand that a little bit. And just to keep it also in the first parak of Pesachim, so that was one possible suggestion, if you recall, we mentioned this in the first day or two of the Minchas Elazar. It suggested, but it drew from this literature, that maybe, yes, Min HaTorah, Bittul works and you don't need Bedika. But maybe once the rabbi said you need Bedika, so then that becomes the parameters of the Din Min HaTorah. They have the right to redefine it. That Min HaTorah, you wouldn't have needed Bedika. But they came and said, you do. So now that's why Rashi says you'll violate Bayura, Bayumatze without it, because they can come and redefine things. So that topic we're going to have to majorly explore tomorrow. A lot to say about it. And then we could look at Rabbi Hanan's two other Chakiros. And then it'll tell you something else, which you don't see really anywhere, which may put it all back into our original structure. So a lot on the agenda here. But just to quickly recap what we saw today, so we discussed the basic disputes about rabbinic authority, that Pasuk and Parsha Shoftim, according to the Rambam, includes both judiciary and legislative authority. The Rambam disagrees. Context is only legislative, it has only judiciary, and also how are we lenient by the Rabbanans if they all come from the Torah. And also Yamin is small, what does that mean? Rashi quotes a Medrash, even if it's against the Torah, sounds like a mistake, is also binding. That's a problem. So many sources in Chazal that indicate otherwise. So one possibility is not really a mistake, but it looks like a mistake. And we had to keep that in mind as well. So then we saw that the Gemara Nivamos tells us, after a lot of back and forth, that the rabbis can uproot Torah law as long as it's done passively. Many examples, two of which we focused on, Gezeirah the Rabba, the concern not to carry on Shabbos, and the various mitzvot that we don't do for that reason, and that we don't put tzitzis on a linen garment, even though by Torah law we should, but we're afraid you may violate the Isser of Shatnez. And these are examples of the rabbis being able to violate the sense of Torah law for their own gezeros. We talked a little bit about the relationship between Los Osir and Shmarti Mus Mishmarti, and we said that Rabbi Chanan gave this elegant explanation that Yomun Usmal is actually this authority, that they, if they knowingly tell you left is right and right is left, that is included within their ability to make legislation, and you have to follow that as well. Specifically for the Rambam. Rambam, we got into a little bit of a tangent. You don't need this answer. It doesn't really work for the Rambam, but you don't need it anyway because of his different understandings. And then we talked about how this applies to these examples. And then we raised the question, the first of Rabbi Chanan's three major questions here. What does the word Akiras Davar Min HaTorah mean? What does it mean? Does it mean what it sounds like? Literal translation? You can uproot something from the Torah. They can rewrite the Torah. Doesn't that contradict our belief in the eternality of the Torah? Isn't that what we've fought against all these centuries, that you can't change anything in the Torah? So how could that be? So I have to see which one it is. And a few examples that were suggested now, that first of all, Rabbeinu Yonah's suggestion that they should redefine the parameters of when Kriya Shema would be, but that doesn't have any practical implications because no one subscribes to that. And this question of the Gemara in Sukkah and Daf Gimel, where it sounds like if you didn't follow the rules, the rabbinic rules about your table inside the Sukkah, even the Torah mitzvah is not fulfilled. That's the way Tosfos understood the Gemara. And the Ran says, yeah, it doesn't mean that. It means that you're not doing it perfectly, but of course the Torah mitzvah is still there. So we also raised the question related to our most focus here about Shabbos and Shofar. So what if you do blow Shofar on Shabbos? Is there a Kiyum Mitzvah? And we'll see tomorrow that one great 20th century Acharon found this to be one of the hardest questions he's ever confronted, how that could possibly be a consideration. We'll discuss why that is. Stay tuned for that. And also the question of positive mitzvot that are enhanced by Chazal. What happens if you only do them partially, if you don't do them with the rabbinic enhancements? How exactly does that impact on those mitzvot? So all of that on the agenda for tomorrow, and quite a lot to explore. So I look very forward to seeing you then. Should have a wonderful day, and we'll see you, God willing, at 9 o'clock tomorrow. All right. Enjoy.